It is a Wednesday night series. We've been looking at this Feast of Israel's. That's what the feast has been. It's a six-week series, and this is the third lesson. So we're halfway through, but it's going to get some interruptions, all right? And it's had interruptions. And so there's a lot of symbolism in these series. And when we take and we look at the feasts that we've already seen, we can tie them into Jesus Christ. We can tie them into prophecy. We can see them in the millennial reign. And so there's a lot of prophecies that really have Christ hidden in them. And so we're able to really find Christ now, where when these feasts took place, because all these feasts are in the Old Testament, that's where they started. When they took place, you know, it was just a feast commemorating something or celebrating something, as you know, that's what we've been looking at. And so they really didn't know what was going on. It was the immediate of what God had given them in this feast or celebration. And they were blinded to the fact that this pictured Messiah, pictured Christ. And of course, we're on the other side of Christ's coming. And so we as the church now look back and we see the feasts that, by the way, the Jews are still observing today and still blinded to the fact that it points to the Lord Jesus. And so that's what we've been looking at. And so the series is called The Feasts of Israel, and we've been looking at these feasts. Now, tonight, this feast is completely different than any other that we're going to do. It has nothing to do with Messiah. It has nothing to do with the church. It touches prophecy very little. And you're saying, then why are you bringing us this? And I'm answering, because I thought you'd find it interesting. This has got nothing to do with God tonight. Isn't that awful? You're saying, my goodness, how can you say that? This has nothing to do with God. Well, it does have something to do with God. It has something to do with God's people. And I'm going to show it to you. But by the time we finish tonight, you're going to say, I get it, Pastor. I know exactly what you meant when you said that, all right? So John chapter 10, look at verse 22, and keep your Bibles open, because we're going to come back here and we're going to finish reading. But right now, just verse 22, all right? And it was at Jerusalem, the feast of the dedication, and it was winter. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch. Okay, and that's all we're going to do right now. But I want you to notice something. And it was at Jerusalem, the feast of the dedication, and it was winter. And we are studying the feast of dedication, also known as the festival of lights, but you know it better as Hanukkah. Hanukkah, yes, which we think it's the Jewish Christmas. Oh, no, it's not. Okay, so Hanukkah. So what do we find? Well, I want you to notice something, though. I want you to notice that it's going on in Jesus' day. I want you to notice that the Lord celebrates it just as well, because it is a Jewish holiday, all right? It's a feast. It's a celebration. And so, yes, the Lord is there. It is specifically mentioned. It's specifically mentioned by John. And why did he take the time, inspired by the Holy Spirit, obviously, to put in there that it was the dedication, feast of dedication, it was winter? Well, we'll talk about that at the end, all right? Because it's neat that this would come up. But what are we looking at? Well, it's called the Festival of Lights, or Hanukkah, which in the Hebrew, you may see it with a C at front of it, but do not call it Chanukah. Because it's not. The C is silent. It's Hanukkah no matter how you cut it, okay? So it's Hanukkah, all right? Which is Feast of Lights. So you say it has two names. Yes, it does, and you'll see why. It's called the Feast of Dedication, and that was its original name, but it's also called the Festival of Lights. So one is a Feast of Dedication, one is a Festival of Lights. So it's called the Festival of Lights. The Festival of Lights part is the one that's really called Hanukkah. But Hanukkah is the complete and total feast and festival and everything together. Okay? Now, the festival is being observed in the time of Christ, and it was being celebrated probably with more intensity than it is today. So Hanukkah, yes. Jews celebrate Hanukkah, and you're going to say, yep, I see what you're saying. But the festival and the feast, which are together, the festival and the feast, that it's got a very interesting beginning, and it has a very interesting background, because the fact of the matter is that it really doesn't have anything to do with God, all right? So let me give you the history here. It's 168 BC, and the place is a small town in ancient Israel, and they are under, Israel is occupied by the Assyrian Empire. So the Assyrian Empire came down, and of course they went all the way to Egypt, and then they went back up again because there's war going on between Egypt and the Assyrian Empire, and Israel is trapped in the middle, all right? So we're in the middle of this empire, and of course Israel is under the Assyrian Empire, because the Assyrian Empire goes through Israel toward Egypt and then comes back again, and I mean, they're just in the middle of this. As the empire proceeds through its occupied territories, which Israel is one of them, we find that their king, Antiochus Epiphanes, is sending out decrees to the empire, and there's changes being made by the empire, because these are newly occupied territories. Obviously, this empire is trying to expand itself, as they all did. And so the king of the Assyrian Empire is Antiochus Epiphanes. A decree is passed, and this decree from His Excellency says that all of the occupied territories must now worship the god of the Assyrians, Zeus. And they're all supposed to do that. They're all falling under the religious blanket of the Assyrian Empire. So all the occupied territories, not just Israel, are supposed to now worship Zeus. And so it's an Assyrian decree. There's an Assyrian captain with a small band of Assyrian soldiers that come into Israel to enforce the decree. And so the decree is made, and right away they go to where Jehovah would be worshipped. And they're doing this all over the empire, all right? Where Jehovah, because we're in Israel, where Jehovah would be worshipped, and they say, okay, now we're going to go ahead and we're going to sacrifice to Zeus off of wherever you would worship your god, you are now going to worship our god, because you are now under us. And your children will grow up now worshiping our god, because, you know, they're going to be there for hundreds of years. They're an empire. And so they go ahead and they impose upon the Israelis that they're supposed to now sacrifice to Zeus. And guess what is the favorite sacrifice of the Assyrians for Zeus? A pig. This ain't going to fly in Israel. I'm telling you right now, this ain't going to happen, okay? So what we find then is that this captain is there with his army, and they're ready. They're going to sacrifice to this pig, and they're placing on the altar. And there's a problem in Israel, because Israel is in rebellion. Israel is not going to sacrifice, not to Zeus, not a pig, and not in their temple, not in their altar. And so there's a problem going on. So in this rebellion, this captain, now with his small army here, is coming upon one man and his five sons. And this man's name is Mattathias. Mattathias is saying, no, we are not going to sacrifice a pig in our God's altar. No, it's blasphemy. It's sacrilegious for us. But the captain says, you don't understand. You don't have your religion anymore. Now you're under our religion. Your God doesn't exist. It's our God. And so what you're telling us means nothing to us. You will sacrifice this pig on that altar. Man's got five sons, and I'll give you their names because it's important. And so the first son is John, second Simeon, Judas the third, also called Maccabees or Maccabeus. It depends on how you pronounce that. Normally, it's Maccabees, all right? Maccabees. Then there's Eleazar, and then there's Jonathan. So the father, if you will, with his five sons, are standing there, and they're saying, you are not coming into the temple. We are not doing this sacrifice. The argument continues, and the captain is saying that he's calling in for reinforcements, and that the town will be sorry that it is fighting the empire. And the father says, no, we're not backing down. The captain picks up the pig and he puts it on the altar. We're inside the temple now. And Mattathias says, no, we're not killing the pig on the altar. All of a sudden, this is getting very intense. A Jew whose name we don't know comes out of this audience, this place is packed, comes out of the audience with a knife and tells the captain, I'll kill the pig, doing it so that it would stop reinforcements from coming and who knows what they're going to do to the town. Already the Assyrian Empire has done a lot to the women and the children, and there's been a lot of slaughtering going on. And so he comes in and he says, I'm going to kill this pig. As he says, I'm going to kill this pig, and he rushes toward the altar. Mattathias takes out his knife and yells, stop, to this guy. The guy stops and Mattathias kills this man. All of a sudden, in this rage and this screaming, this guy saying, well, I'll kill the pig. And Mattathias saying, well, no, stop. And he stops the man and he kills the man. The five boys get up. They pull out their swords. They run at the captain and this small band of soldiers, and they kill them all. So now we've got all the Assyrians dead, this small army, The captain is dead. We've got a Jew over here that they saw as being rebellious to the fact that, no, we've got to stand for our God. And the sons and the father dismantle the altar, release the pig, and Mattathias and his five sons start a 3-year guerrilla war against the Assyrians, where the Assyrians are just, there's nothing they can do. They rally the Israelites, and all of Israel is in turmoil against Assyria. They will not sacrifice. They will not sacrifice. There's Assyrian soldiers being killed at night. There's attacks being done to the Assyrians. The Assyrians are going crazy because these Israelites are coming out of nowhere. It's guerrilla warfare. It's when they least expect it. It's on the roads, and they're hiding in the hills. Mattathias and his sons are hiding in the hills. I mean, all this is going on. And so this guerrilla warfare attacks Syrian outposts. It's driving them crazy. And all of Israel is involved in this, not just this little group. But there's a good group that, of course, Mattathias and his sons, a small army that is really the ones that are behind this rebellion in Israel against the Assyrians. Now, let's fast forward. It's 165 BC. It's been 3 years. Alexander the Great defeats the Assyrians. So Antius Epiphanes, he's gone, all right? And it's a great day for Israel. The Assyrians are gone. And so on the 25th day of the Jewish month of Kislev, which is, in our calendar, late November to late December, very important, okay? And so on the 25th day of their month of Kislev, which is our late November through our late December, exactly 3 years to the day from the start of the rebellion, Judah Maccabees, because father passed away in those 3 years. Judah Maccabees is now the head of the army. And he has really been the head of this rebellion pretty much nationwide. He's been the leader. It used to be dad, but dad passed away, and now it's Judah Maccabees. Judah Maccabees and the people, now 3 years later to the day, dedicate the cleansing of the temple and sacrifice to Jehovah. For the first time, history says, in 6 or 7 years, because there had been a time that they had not sacrificed before the rebellion took place, you know, where they wanted the pig to be sacrificed in the altar. Already there had been a few years that there had not been any sacrifices to Jehovah. But now, for the first time, they dedicate the temple, the cleansing of the temple, and it's the first sacrifice to take place for Jehovah since all this took place. The celebration of their freedom and their dedication of the temple lasts 8 days. At the end of the 8 days, which, by the way, it featured music and feasting and dancing and worship and the praising of God, Judah Maccabees declares this to be a national holiday, which is going to be observed for generations. It's going to be 8 days, which is how long they have been in celebration. 8 days, and it's going to be 8 days of the same thing, just rejoicing and feasting and worshiping and praising God. And it is instituted to be observed every year, lasting 8 days, in memory of, and this is important that you get the memory. The memory, what is it celebrating? Listen to me. Today, Hanukkah celebrates the restoration of their temple worship. In that time, it happened right then and there, 165 BC. And it was the celebration of the restoration of their temple worship. Thus was established and became known as the Feast of Dedication, Hanukkah. All right, now, the feast is not God-given. God's nowhere in this. As a matter of fact, when you look at it, you realize something, and that is that historically, this very much appears, not only in the Syrian history, which is Assyria, but also in the Jewish history, obviously. But the problem is that it's only historical because it happened within the 400 years between the Old Testament and the New Testament, when there's no history or prophets in Israel. So God wasn't speaking. God was nowhere to be found, if you will. He was there. But, you know, as far as prophets, nothing. It's that 400-year gap between Old Testament and New Testament is when this happens. And so we find that this is only a historical event. God was not speaking. God had nothing to do with this. This is strictly historical event that happens when there were no prophets. God was not to be found, if you will. All right? It's in between the Testaments. So what about today? Okay. Today, on the 25th day of the month of Kislev, in every Jewish home, Hanukkah starts with the lighting of the candles. Because there was a lot of candles lit in 165 BC. According to history, the temple was full of candles. And as the restoration and the worship took place, at night they would light many candles around the temple in order to dedicate the temple again. And that celebration that went on for 8 days in 165 BC had a lot of lights, and they would light a lot of candles, and that was part of the celebration. And so today, on the 25th day of the month of Kislev, it starts an 8-day celebration called Hanukkah, and that's when they have the Festival of Lights. So the Festival of Lights is connected and very much a part of the Feast of Dedication. They're together, okay? They're together. One is celebrating the other, but it's the same thing, all right? So the candles then are taking place. The candle lighting is taking place, and it's called the Festival of Lights. So we're not only celebrating the dedication, but we're also celebrating it with the Festival of Lights, okay? I hope you got it. Now, there's a special candelabra that is used for this event and only for this event. A lot of people think it's used for other events. No, this is strictly used only for Hanukkah, and it's called the menorah. So, 4 candles on this side, 4 on this side, 1 in the middle. The one in the middle of the candlestick is called the service candle. And you don't touch the other candles. You only touch the one in the middle, because that candle is lit first, but it is not part of the 8 days. And when the first day on the 25th comes, then you take that candle in the middle and you light the first. Tomorrow, you'll take the candle in the middle, which is always lit, and you'll light the second. The next day, you'll take the candle in the middle, which is always lit, and you'll light the third. And you'll go for 8 days lighting candle, always lit with the one in the middle. And that is part of this festival of lights. And so for each one, nine candles, but the four on each side is really the ones that are important. They are the 8 days of celebration of Hanukkah. And they stay lit till the end of the month. So once you finish the eighth day and you light the last one, they remain lit till the end of the month. All right, so what we find then is that these nine candles then stay lit, the one in the middle being the service candle. And by the way, it's called the servant. The one in the middle is called the servant. It's used to light the others. The menorah is then placed in the front window or some place where it will be seen by most people so that the lighting can serve as a testimony for the strength and the resilience of the people of Israel. And of course, it goes back to Mattathias and Maccabee and his family and the rebellion that they brought about against the Assyrians. Every day after the lighting of the menorah, and remember, you know, you're lighting one every day for 8 days. Every day after the lighting of the menorah, the family sings a song. They have a special meal that has to do with Hanukkah, and so they have their meal. So for 8 days, this is going on. It's a holiday, by the way. You're not working like a Sabbath or anything like that, but you're just not going to work, all right? It's a holiday. And so as you're lighting it, there's every day there's going to be songs, you're going to sing songs, you're going to have special foods eaten, and it's all part of what is called the Hanukkah meal. And so there's a lot of celebration going on. At the end of the 8 day, the big moment arrives. The moment that every child has been waiting for. Because there's the Hanukkah gift exchange. Now, doesn't that sound like Christmas? Yeah, and remember, this happened way back, okay? So, yes, believe it or not, the kids exchange gifts. And that's just part of it. Now, it's a little different today, okay? So if you have a Jewish friend, the story will, I mean, they'll know the story. If they're good Jew. But a lot has changed today because the fact is there is no doubt that Hanukkah, the way it's observed today, has been highly influenced by Christmas, okay? So even though what I've told you still is the way they do it, they light, you know, each candle for the 8 days, that part hasn't changed. However, it's become more of a Christmassy type. Even though, let me tell you, in Israel, they separate from Christmas. They let it be known that this has nothing to do with Christmas and we are not celebrating Christmas. The problem is that both are at the same time of the year and they have similarities. There's lighting and so on. But we're having a problem today that started back in the middle of the 20th century that have got Orthodox Jews just so upset. Because there are Jewish families that are bringing a Christmas tree into their house and calling it a Hanukkah bush. Can you believe that? I mean, come on. But that's what's going on today. So today, it is not uncommon for Jews to have a Christmas tree. Excuse me, a Hanukkah bush. Because that's the way the influence has taken place, okay? They want to, you know, they want to assimilate. They want to become part of the you know, people around them. And so, yeah, they've actually got a Hanukkah bush, okay? But now keep something in mind. This is a man-made holiday, and it's a national holiday. So scripturally, we don't find this. So there's no scriptural right or wrong. The truth is that it's got nothing to do with God. So it's not like, oh, it's blasphemy. No. Keep God out of this. As you can see, it's got nothing to do with God. It had to do with a military achievement of a of a a small group of Israelites, which is what made Israel at that time, you know, there was not a great nation, that resisted an empire for 3 years. And so at the end, they took 8 days of celebration, they cleansed their temple, and they were able to worship Jehovah again. And you know what? Jehovah never ceased to be worshiped. And they never, they never desecrated the temple by killing the pig. And so that's what it celebrates. It's a national holiday. It means nothing religiously. So there's no religious right or wrong. You know, God's not going to get mad or no. We've got nothing like that going on, all right? And so it has nothing to do with God. So that's why I bring this to you and I'm saying it has nothing to do with God. I'm just bringing it because it's interesting. A lot of people think that Hanukkah is a Jewish religious holiday. It is not, okay? And now you know all of the story, but we're not quite finished yet, all right? I want to talk about Jesus walking on that day and why John was specific about telling us that they were celebrating this holiday and then what happens afterwards, because Hanukkah does have a scriptural prophetic connection. Okay, so how did you dig this up, Pastor? Well, it didn't take much, as you'll see, okay? It does have a religious prophetic connection. Now, let me, you know, I just told you it has nothing to do with God. I just told you that it is not a religious holiday. So I need to explain myself. And you'll see it when we finish here in a minute, and we'll get all this read and taken care of. A prophetic connection doesn't necessarily mean that it was God-given or that the holiday had anything to do with God. However, what we do find is that it prophetically, believe it or not, this Hanukkah, this celebration was prophesied. And it does have a prophetic connection. Not that God said that they were supposed to have Hanukkah. No. Disconnected from religion. It's a national holiday, all right? However, let me show you something. Let's go back, John chapter 10, and we read verse 22 and 23, and now we're going to keep reading, okay? We're going to read all the way to verse 33. So let's start in verse 22 again. So notice why John gives us what's happening, and then what the Lord says and all of that that we're going to be reading, okay? And it was at Jerusalem, the feast of the dedication, and it was winter. So now you know what's going on. And it's interesting that it says, and it was winter. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch. Then came the Jews round about him and said unto him, how long dost thou make us to doubt? If thou be the Christ, tell us plainly. Jesus answered them, I told you, and ye believe not. The works that I do in my Father's name, they bear witness of me. But ye believe not, because ye are not of my sheep. As I said unto you, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish. Neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. My Father, which gave them me, is greater than all, and no man is able to pluck them out of my hand. I and my Father are one. Now, verse 30 is bad news, okay? Because notice, then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. Jesus answered them, many good works have I showed you from my Father. For which of those works do ye stone me? The Jews answered him, saying, for a good work we stone thee not, but for the blasphemy, or for blasphemy, and because that thou, being a man, makest thyself God. Now, verse 33 is very important. Let's read it again. The Jews answered him, saying, for a good work we stone thee not, but here's the part, but for blasphemy, and because that thou, being a man, makest thyself God. Okay, it was already blasphemy for a man to declare himself God, because God is God, okay? But there's more here. So let me back up in the story, the historical account, and let me give you some things. First of all, Antiochus Epiphany. Okay, we don't have time for this. Go to Daniel chapter 11 and chapter 12. You're going to find a description of one that invades Israel. He parallels the Antichrist. When you read the Revelation in Daniel, you realize that, wow, you know, this guy comes so close to being like the Antichrist over here. And so Daniel, the prophet, remember, Daniel the prophet describes what Antiochus Epiphanes did. As he went to and fro, he says, this is Daniel 11 and 12. You got to read both chapters. And you got to read the whole chapter, so we don't have time, but I'll tell you. How he goes to and fro in Israel. Well, that's what Antiochus did, because he was going to Egypt fighting, and so all of the artillery, well, maybe they didn't have artillery, but you know, all of that going on went through Israel. Daniel says this. Then Daniel talks about the fact that this army with this leader wanted to kill a pig on the altar. Well, guess what? The revelation tells us that's what the Antichrist does. He kind of completes what Daniel says that this king was doing to Israel. He was trying to take out the worship of Jehovah and emplace him himself, and that he wanted to make himself God. Well, the Antichrist is God and wants to be like God and wants to be God as far as the people on the earth are concerned. So you take the prophecies of Daniel, and there's no doubt, scholar after scholar, there's no debate here. The king spoken about in chapter 11 and 12 is a parallel to the Antichrist that was given to John in the Revelation. Now, what we find then is that when you go back to Daniel, the description matches also what happened in 165 BC, where, yes, they're going back and forth. Yes, it is decreed that they're going to, you know, remove the religion of Israel. So several things. Number one, Daniel says that this king makes himself a god. He comes and he wants to destroy the Israelites, and this pretty well happened. They butchered a lot of Israelites when they were coming through to get to Egypt. They wanted to topple the Egyptian empire. Now, by the way, I'll get to this in a minute. And so what happens is that Daniel describes a lot of this. Well, then we go to Antiochus Epiphanes. So in 168 BC, when Antiochus is at his highest, what we find is that Antiochus is born. Antiochus the IV. He's of the line of Antiochus. They're Syrian, okay? But as he takes the throne, he's Antiochus the IV. The empire is already in full strength. And he sees himself as great. As a matter of fact, he's going to come against the Egyptians, and he's going to come up against Alexander the Great. He wants to get to Alexandria, Egypt. He doesn't, but he wants to. He doesn't just call himself Antiochus the IV, which is his true and legal name. He calls himself Antiochus Epiphanes. Epiphanes is not his name. Epiphanes is the root word for our epiphany, and it means God revealed. God revealed. So he takes on the name Epiphanes, and the empire calls him Antioch Epiphanes, and all of the priests of Zeus and all those around him see him as God incarnate. He's an entity just like the Egyptian Pharaoh that has been sent down. But see, 200 years before, Daniel has prophesied this, that this is going to happen. And what we find then is that Epiphanes, meaning God revealed, the Jews have Jesus in their midst. John says they're in the middle of the Feast of the Dedication. What was the feast about? It was about the time that a king came down from the north and declared himself to be God incarnate. Put it together. And the Israelites or about to lose everything that they've ever been given by God because of this king who was God revealed, God incarnate. That's what he called himself, saying that Zeus was the god and that he had been sent from the god, and he was God incarnate. With that in their minds, now here we have the Lord Jesus Christ saying, I am God incarnate. And it blows the Jews. They cannot believe what is happening. And so look at verse 32. Jesus answered them, many good works have I showed you from my Father. For which of those works do ye stone me? They're ready to kill him. They're ready to get rid of him. Because what we find is that here in the midst of the celebration of dedication, they remembered that 200 years before, there's another man, Antiochus Epiphanes, who made a similar claim. And you know what? He was out to destroy them. He was not really from God. And so on this occasion, celebration of Hanukkah, the Lord makes the same declaration. But there's a big difference here. Antiochus Epiphanes is dead. Antiochus Epiphanes wanted to destroy the Jews. Antiochus Epiphanes never rose from the dead. Antiochus Epiphanes never performed miracles. That's why the Lord is saying, look at my works. They're the works of the Father. Antiochus Epiphanes, listen, Jews, think. Antiochus Epiphanes killed your boys, slaughtered your girls, took your young women back to Syria. I mean, everything he slaughtered. Those aren't the works of my Father. The works of my Father is what you have seen, and they're the works of our God. So don't look at me as Antiochus Epiphanes. Look at me as your Messiah. That's what the Lord is trying to say here. So the conversation, we miss that. If we don't get the fact that John says it was the feast of the dedication, which is in winter, and he goes on, if you don't know everything about it's a conversation, and it's okay. It's an okay conversation. But now it's got a little bit more meaning. Because now you realize, okay, these guys were already celebrating what happened 2 years back, 200 years back, that, you know what, was the same thing, exactly the same thing as what Jesus is trying to convince them of. Worship me. I am God revealed. And so, now you notice the prophetic connection that I'm talking about. Now, it doesn't change the fact that this is a national holiday, okay? God has nothing to do with the holiday. But do you see the prophetic connection? I mean, it almost looks like, you know, Satan works something here because he's going to work something here now. And boy, I mean, it's just because I want you to notice the reason the Lord answered the way he answered is because they came to him and said, why do you make us doubt? Tell us the truth. Well, God isn't going to tell them a lie. He tells them the truth. I am God incarnate. I am your Messiah. I am the anointed one of God. That's the truth. But what was in their mind already was, this is the celebration of Hanukkah. We've heard this before. And, you know, they tell the story every Hanukkah. They tell the story every Hanukkah. So this was very much in their minds. And so that is Hanukkah. Is it prophetic in any way, other way? It is not. In other words, they're not going to be celebrating Hanukkah in the millennial reign. Okay, they're going to be celebrating other one, but not this one. This is one of those that God had nothing to do with, and so it is not going to be celebrated. Wasn't that cool? Isn't that neat? Did you know about the menorah and all those little details? I mean, I already did, but I'm supposed to, but a lot of people, they completely miss it. I've heard people say, oh, well, you know, the Jews are celebrating their Christmas, you know, Hanukkah. No. National holiday, nothing to do with God. And do not tie it in with Christmas because they don't want to tie it in with Christmas, except for the Hanukkah bush. But other than that, nothing like that, okay? Anyway, that's why I brought it to you, because it's this time of the year, you're seeing signs. And remember, if it's got a C in front of it, it's only the Hebrew, but it's still pronounced Hanukkah. The C is silent, all right?